program you are about to hear, Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, is parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the Church of the Subgenius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
Hey, you're listening to Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, the Lymph Node Institute edition. I'm Dr. Bug Bladder.
And I'm Doc Ellis.
And we're here to bring you all you ever wanted to know about pathogens. That's right, those
bacteria and virus is invading your body.
How you
setting
like that?
Setting up camp.
These aren't just micronauts, people.
No.
They got flagellum and they're ready to use them.
And an agenda. The Magellans with flagellum.
You might just think we're being silly, but really, these can make you so sick you'll die.
And not laughing.
That's right, pathogens. We've decided pathogens are what you've been wanting to hear.
We did depression, we did alcohol, now we're doing pathogens. Things that kill you.
Funny that.
Monkey. again.
Pneumonia. Pathogens.
So, are you feeling sick?
Diseased.
Under the weather.
Then listen to Bob's Slacktime Funhouse. Wait, we already did that ad. Let's play it. Remember this ad?
Bob's Slacktime Funhouse is the cure for the diseases you don't know you have.
Do you suffer from necrophilia, anxiety, depression, boredom, apathy,
gullibility,
low self-esteem,
cardiac,
rectal, or cranial,
analysts,
addiction,
psychosis,
neurosis,
paranoia,
catatonia,
hysteria,
schizophrenia,
bipolar
curiosity,
hyper-onanism,
nerdism,
blue balls,
OCD.
If so, you need Bob's Slacktime Funhouse. Tune in at 1 a.m. Saturday night for your weekly inoculation
and a dose of Bob's Own Medicine. The preceding claims have not been certified by any reputable medical organization. Bob's Slacktime Funhouse may cause smallpox, rash, discharge, recidivism, colorblindness, seizure, monobrowism,
synchronicities,
Dobbs syndrome, caboose loosening, morning wood, Rosetta stones, flying buttresses, or death. Your local subgenius radio ministry. Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, Saturday night at 1 a.m. WRAK Atlanta, 91.1 FM.
You know, if you're dead, you can't listen to our show.
And what use are you then?
Well, they are great food tubes.
Ah, food tube. But watch out, that food may have E. coli.
Or it may have been genetically altered to give you some disorder over time, but that's not necessarily a pathogen.
Not necessarily, not yet. We may have to reclassify in the future.
That's right, you could die just from breathing the air that you have to breathe. Or sitting on a toilet and not using a Ralph Ellermich brand toilet guard.
Or eating at your favorite fast food establishment.
Uh-oh, what did I bite into? A grease bubble? No, a tumor full of disgusting illness.
I wised up when the Burger King that I always went to was closed for 3 days without any sort of explanation.
Here at the Lymph Node Institute, we've heard tell that there is a Chick-fil-A located somewhere in the North Metro Atlanta area that has so many cockroaches they can't be gotten rid of. But we won't tell you which one. No, we're not telling you, but I am serious. So be aware where you eat, people. If you cook at home and clean your own utensils and plates, you're less likely to catch
E. coli,
botulism,
streptococcus,
trichinosis.
There's already a plague. There's a lot of plagues coming down the pipe, and they're hungry. They're hungry for man flesh. They're hungry for woman flesh. They don't care if you're a Yeti. They don't care if you're black, white, Jewish, Mexican.
Jewish Mexicans? What are you talking about?
Oh, it must be a virus. The symptoms are valid, the patient is pallid. I'm faced with unfailing a cure. Oh, it must be a virus. It simulates the flu. When in doubt what to call it, I simply must stall it, as all the consultants do. Stalling, stalling, the art of medicine. Surely it must be a germ. It could even be myocytes. It could be luetic, but why be prophetic? And where are the spirochetes? Surely she hasn't conceived, as thousands of women will do. It could be Neisserian, but she wouldn't carry an infection so taboo. Oh, it must be a virus. I'll search my treatment file. The divided doses and even hypnosis may make the prognosis mild. Oh, it must not disturb me. I'll turn my TV dial. Perhaps the diagnosis will come through osmosis. Decisions are driving me wild. Stalling, installing the art of medicine.
Viruses are very fragile. They live in a very narrow spectrum of the pH range and in a very specific temperature. That is most of them. We'll get into some of these new jobbies later. The reason aspirin works is because it makes your body acidic. It changes the pH balance of your entire body.
I did not know.
And the viruses can, well, they can live, but they cannot flourish. And the fever, of course, raises the temperature in an attempt to literally burn out the virus.
Sure.
And that is
pretty cool, Atlanta.
It is pretty cool, but it's also, when you have a fever, your brain has decided something extremely drastic is going on in the body, because it's basically setting fire to your house to burn out the critters who live in your attic, and you're just hoping that the critters die before the whole house is consumed and you can put the fire out. Because the body will not stop raising the temperature. You experience brain death somewhere between 106 and 108 degrees.
They say that there are cases of higher fevers where
there are
damage.
There are a few people. I mean, because there's always, you know, there's always a standard deviation laying around here and there.
Yeah, sure, the standard deviates.
Like Typhoid Mary was a pretty good standard deviation. She never, ever felt the effects of typhoid, but she was probably directly responsible for the deaths of hundreds and indirectly responsible for perhaps the death of tens of thousands.
Oh, like Columbus.
Oh.
Any of the other explorers that came over and had sex with beautiful native ladies.
Columbus wrote in his diary that the natives were so docile and friendly, they would make perfect slaves.
Has nothing to do with pathogens, unless you want to embody them in a larger form.
Unless you want to say that white men are a virus spreading across the globe, conquering all other nationalities and cultures.
But the FCC says we can't start a race war, so we'll talk about pathogens.
Pathogens.
Yeah.
You all heard that song by the Floyd, you know, Comfortably Numb.
When
I was a child, I had a fever. My hands felt like two balloons. His whole sensory system was shocked by this fever. And he was basically wigging out at an early age from fever. And you can have vivid hallucinations in that fever flop sweat.
I love fevers. I love to have fevers.
Well, even if it's accompanied by an all-over hell ache?
Well, no, but drugs can battle the hell ache, and you're left with almost... You know, it's basically constant brain change. It's like being high for days and days at a time, and nothing is expected of you because I've got a fever, dude. This is natural. Pathogens eat everything. We are not the center of the food web. They, the pathogens, bacterium, viral agents, they eat everything. We eat most things, they eat everything.
But we're bigger than they are, and if you got a whole ecosystem like the Earth, people are just like pathogens on the planet as we, you know, strip away the natural resources and, you know, dolphins.
It's in your closet, it's under your bed. You best not touch it, or you'll end up dead. It's in the news, it's all over town. It chews on your brain, it mutates your cow. It's anthrax. It's anthrax. It flies through the air, it goes up your nose, and if you're not careful, then you'll end up toast. So if you receive this gift from above, do unto others and spread the love of anthrax. Send me whatever you want in the mail, but don't send me that, or you'll go to jail. More subtle than Ebola, and quicker than AIDS, less embarrassing than syphilis, more bubonic than the plague.
These new diseases coming down the pipe, which kind of made us want to do the show, like monkeypox and SARS. Mm-hmm. SARS has an abnormally long survival period outside of the human body.
Most, that's true.
I mean, the reason you're not catching AIDS off the pump at the gas station is because it dies immediately when it leaves the body.
It harkens back to that whole pH balance thing.
Yes, exactly.
It needs an environment to thrive in, and that ain't it.
SARS can live in blood. It can live for almost 2 weeks outside the body.
Mm-hmm.
On paper,
chewing gum,
anything else,
condoms.
You can catch SARS off a gas pump.
Yeah, but it's not a strictly deadly disease.
10% mortality does not sound like a lot.
No.
When you have multiple new viruses starting up at the same time, each with a death rate of about 10%.
It's true.
You're going to work on something called a synergistic effect. Oh, it's just 10%. If it became a pandemic and basically everyone in the world became exposed to it, that would be 600 million casualties.
And you still get really sick, even if you don't.
Yes. One disease like that can weaken you for the next bout. That's what AIDS does. It doesn't technically kill you. You die from pneumonia or a head cold or something like that because your immune system is so ragged out because AIDS attacks the immune system. Because of SARS and monkeypox, or perhaps in spite of them, very little press has been given to this avian flu that was burning through the Netherlands and Belgium. It's an avian, meaning a bird flu, that passed to pigs. And now the pigs have passed it to human beings. That's how they do. That's how they bring the sneezy. AIDS roots are kind of mysterious. Of course, it could have been the monkey circus. Let's hear what that might have sounded like.
Monkeys, let's join one now.
Okay, that could have been the birth of AIDS, or it could have been when the United Nations went through Africa giving a smallpox vaccination virus that was synthesized from a baboon or chimp serum, I'm not sure which. But we don't want to get into all that worldwide conspiracy stuff. We're talking about the wee ones, about the school of little tiny fish that eat the massive fish.
But they're strong-willed, those fish. They want to live as much as, well, let's say you want to live, but they're simple creatures and they're single-minded and they're not distracted by all the stuff that we are, because they don't have 5 sensory organs, or 6 if you're geared that way.
They have fewer weaknesses.
They really do, because they're simplified, they're streamlined, they're ready to go, they're here to burn you out. You are their host, and once they burn you out, they'll jump to the next one. And it's been represented by monsters and space movies and ish, but it's happening all the time, and you could be a Howard Hughes about it. You could be freaked out and always hold a handkerchief in your hand to open the bathroom door, or not breathe for 50 seconds after you hear someone sneeze, even in earshot. You could be totally hosed in the mind and healthy in the body, and then you're screwed. You have to find this balance between, well, there's the sickness out there, but my body is a sleek machine and ready to handle it.
Pathophobia is no way to be. I mean, our whole body is, you know, our immune systems at least have been formed or guided in their progression by reacting to the pathogens that attempted to attack them.
But they give you steroids now for lots of illnesses where they need to help you boost your immune system, and they're finding that they're giving them so indiscriminately that some pretty basic sicknesses are becoming immune to your overpowered immune system.
Yes, the antibiotics. That's why they tell you to finish your antibiotics, because if you don't finish your antibiotics, the illness can develop a resistance to the antibiotics, and that's how you become a goddamn carrier. So forget what I said. Don't finish your antibiotics and go rent a room at a hotel airport and sneeze on everyone you come in contact with.
That's aggressive.
But it works.
Yes.
cities and nations if you do that.
Then in international studies in the 1990s,
our ministry.
Well, what do they say?
Now, you know, God.
With great expectations.
Put up your hand. I mean, you know, God is really sneaky.
Work in our favor. Peace and gentlemen, I'm dizzy and I'm gonna go lay down. Rebroadcast in five.
Straight.
ONI EU, ONI USA. This is your man on the scene, Dr. Ellis.
I'd like to start by saying that the accoutrements to my business trip that were implied, no, not implied, promised, are notably absent. I really don't understand how I got talked into this. This is obviously intern work. Bastards better not be trying to, say, restructure the board while I'm in this hellhole. Don't underestimate me, you alley cats. If I go down, everybody goes down.
Oh, yeah. And the object contingencies division.
Well, you were right about the relative pittance that passes as a bribe over here. You did grossly underestimate the volume of distributions I would have to make.
I must again protest on the record the mode of transportation that our frugal teammates in control insist that we use.
Why should learned Yeti doctors have to spend a week with the rats in the hold of some dingy freighter when I could have easily replaced a member of the EIP team with 15 seconds of effort in an airport bathroom?
That guy was so soft. I sparked the taser once. Once!
Didn't even have to juice him. He just handed over his cigarettes. Then I juiced him.
In short, gentlemen, I'm not going back on that damn boat.
Well, I guess I bitched away enough of your precious broadcast time. I assume you still need this information. Well, referencing the concerns raised in the internal CDC email, primary confirmation, the Chinese chicken flu is for real. It meets two of the Institute's vital criteria.
First, the agent is appearing in the chronological probability window for a pandemic.
Second, the agent has trans-species mobility. Additionally, the diseased fowl probably won't be wasted. These people are going to ingest the tainted birds rather than risk starvation. I can't say I blame them, although I can't sympathize since I've been vomiting uncontrollably since I arrived. But in answer to the question here, yes, you should institute the appropriate elevations in this matter.
And let me say this about that. If you try to squeeze me out,
your faces will be on the front page of every newspaper in the world. Okay, as to the secondary sabotage of the CDC, I would say they've done a decent enough job of that by themselves. By graciously agreeing to go only where the Chinese government allows them to go, they are missing key elements of the situation. Their data will be very misleading.
And as to the secondary acquisition of sample agent, I have acquired some raw sample.
And failing that, have introduced the agent to two CDC employees who can be requisitioned at the airport upon their return. But make them go through customs first.
Additionally, I've completed a little goal of my own.
The agent has been introduced to numerous international flights bound for cities all throughout Europe, Asia, and North America. Knees high, people. Time to move on this.
If you're smart, you'll take my advice. Prioritize in the following order.
Number one, do not travel to Asia. Number two, do not fly on an airplane or go to the airport. Number three, do not go to a hospital or dentist's office. Number four, avoid crowds.
Number five, avoid old people.
Number six, avoid children.
If you do currently possess any old people or children,
don't let them mingle with other old people or children, respectively, or vice versa. Number seven, stock up and stay home. You know, I've been thinking, and while the situation is a little out of sync with our schedule, it may actually facilitate our goals.
The strain on law enforcement and authority in general is only one of the major factors that would work in our favor.
Well, on that note, ladies
and gentlemen, I'm dizzy and I'm gonna go lay down. Rebroadcast in 5, 4, 3, 2.
name of Muhammad.
Holy, you just paid a big price.
The thing is, you go to God, it doesn't matter your name.
Here's a toast to the medical clan. Drink a toast to the medical man. He's a guy who works both night and day. He gives, he lives the American way. Raise a glass to the fellow in white. He's got class, he's the town shining light. He's a guy with savoir faire. No better citizen you'll find anywhere. So drink a toast to the medical men all over the USA. Oh, here's a toast to the medical clan. Drink a toast to the medical man, for he gives his best the human way. His best no less, and that's why I say here's the most to the man I admire. Drink a toast to the one who desires to protect humanity. Proud is he of the letters MD, so drink a toast to the medical men all over the USA. Here's to the OB men, here's to the GP men, drink to the radiologists. Toast the internist, psychiatrist, cheers to the dermatologist. Pediatrician, hematologist, neurophysician, cardiologist, ear men, bone men, chest men, knife men, anesthesiologist. We are men who want the most to build our name without a boastful love, and money makes this one a doctor. Doctor, D-O-C-T-O, a doctor. Raise your glass, show your class, for doctor's a name we love. Here's a toast to the medical men all over the USA. Here's a toast to the doctors. Raise a glass to the doctors. Drink a toast to the doctors of the USA.
No, 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 no. You must have an agenda behind that disease.
You don't need an agenda. You don't need a laboratory. All you need is one sick dude. One sick guy with something like SARS or monkeypox. The airport hotel is perfect because airports and airplanes themselves are the perfect vehicle. If viruses could design a viral infection chamber that would help them jump from person to person, it would be an airplane.
You mean an airtight tube with a bunch of people where the air is circulated throughout the cabin?
For hours at a time, and people sweat.
And sometimes even sleep.
As a matter of fact, there's a funny story in a book called The Hot Zone, which is about the Ebola virus. As a matter of fact, instead of trying to remember what the hell it said, I'll go home and read it into the tape, and you can hear it. It's real funny. It's about a guy on an airplane vomiting up his stomach lining into his air sickness bag.
You told me about this when you read it. Nasty.
So here's how it went.
And now it's apocalypse story time with Richard Preston in his book, The Hot Zone. The headache begins typically on the seventh day after exposure to the agent. On the seventh day after his exposure, Monet felt a throbbing pain behind his eyeballs. He decided to stay home from work and went to bed in his bungalow. His headache grew worse. His eyeballs ached and then his temples began to ache, the pain seeming to circle around inside his head. It would not go away with aspirin, and then he got a severe headache. Then, on the third day after its headache started, he became nauseated, spiked a fever, and began to vomit. His vomiting grew intense and turned into dry heaves. At the same time, he became strangely passive. His face lost all appearance of life and set itself into an expressionless mask, with the eyeballs fixed, paralytic, and staring. The eyelids were slightly droopy, which gave him a peculiar appearance, as if his eyes were popping out of his head and half-closed at the same time. The eyeballs themselves seemed almost frozen in their sockets, and they turned bright red. The skin of his face turned yellowish with brilliant star-like red speckles. He began to look like a zombie. His appearance frightened the temporary housekeeper. She didn't understand the transformation in this man. His personality changed. He became sullen, resentful, angry, and his memory seemed to be blown away. He was not delirious. He could answer questions, although he didn't seem to know exactly where he was. When Monet failed to show up for work, his colleagues began to wonder about him, and eventually they went to his bungalow to see if he was all right. They looked at Monet and decided that he needed to get to a hospital. Since he was very unwell and no longer able to drive a car, one of his co-workers drove him to a private hospital in the city of Kisumu on the shore of Lake Victoria. The doctors at the hospital examined Monet and could not come up with any explanation for what had happened to his eyes or his face or his mind. Thinking that he might have some kind of bacterial infection, they gave him injections of antibiotics, but the antibiotics had no effects on his illness. The doctors thought he should go to Nairobi Hospital, which is the best private hospital in East Africa. The telephone system hardly worked, and it did not seem worth the effort to call any doctors to tell them that he was coming. He could still walk, and he seemed able to travel by himself. He had money. He understood he had to get to Nairobi. They put him in a taxi to the airport, and he boarded a Kenya Airways flight. The hot virus from the rainforest lives within a 24-hour plane flight from every city on Earth. All of the Earth's cities are connected by a web of airline routes. The web is a network. One virus hits the net, it can shoot anywhere in a day, wherever planes fly. Charles Monet and the life form inside him had entered that net. Fokker Friendship, with propellers, a commuter aircraft that seats 35 people. It started its engines and took off over Lake Victoria, blue and sparkling, dotted with the dugout canoes of fishermen. The Friendship turned and banked eastward, climbing over green hills quilted with tea plantations and small farms. The commuter flights that drone across Africa are often jammed with people, and this flight was probably full. The plane climbed over belts of forest and clusters of round huts and villages with tin roofs. The land suddenly dropped away, going down in shelves and ravines and changed in color from green to brown. The plane was crossing the Eastern Rift Valley. The passengers looked out the windows at the place where the human species was born. they saw specks of huts clustered inside circles of thorn brush, with cattle trails radiating from the huts. The propellers moaned and the Friendship passed through cloud streets, lines of puffy, ripped clouds, and began to bounce and sway. Monet became airsick. The seats are narrow and jammed together on these commuter airplanes, and you notice everything that is happening inside the cabin. The cabin is tightly closed and the air recirculates. If there are any smells in the air, you perceive them. You would not have been able to ignore the man who was getting sick. He hunched over in his seat. There is something wrong with him, but you can't tell exactly what is happening. He is holding an air sickness bag over his mouth. He coughs a deep cough and regurgitates something into the bag. The bag swells up. Perhaps he glances around, and then you see that his lips are smeared with something slippery and red, mixed with black specks as if he has been chewing coffee grounds. His eyes are the color of rubies, and his face is an expressionless mask of bruises. The red spots, which a few days before had started out as star-like speckles, have expanded and merged into huge, spontaneous purple shadows. His whole head is turning black and blue. The muscles of his face droop. The connective tissue in his face is dissolving, and his face appears to hang from the underlying bone as if the face is detaching itself from the skull. He opens his mouth and gasps into the bag, and the vomiting goes on endlessly. It will not stop, and he keeps bringing up liquid long after his stomach should have been empty. The air sickness bag fills up to the brink with a substance known as vomito negro, or the black vomit. The black vomit is not really black. It is a speckled liquid of two colors, black and red, a stew of tarry granules mixed with fresh red arterial blood. It is hemorrhage, and it smells like a slaughterhouse. The black vomit is loaded with virus. It is highly infective, lethally hot, a liquid that would be very frightening to military biohazard specialists. The smell of the vomito negro fills the passenger cabin. The air sickness bag is brimming with black vomit, so Monet closes the bag and rolls up the top. The bag is bulging and softening, threatening to leak, and he hands it to a flight attendant.
That old bad breath, old bad breath. That awful odor's worse than death, but halitosis beats no breath at all. A turned up nose means you're one of those who should you sin or chew cloves, but halitosis beats no breath at all. Now all the dentists say if you can pay, they'll cure that disease. It isn't so, so save your dough. Be grateful for malodorous wheeze.
Now don't be sad if your breath is bad. You've every reason to be glad, for halitosis beats no breath at all. Now you will find a few best friends who won't tell you of your sin. Let insults lay, there'll come the day you'll wonder where the yellow went. Now don't be sad if your breath is bad. You've every reason to be glad, for halitosis beats no breath at all.
He appears to be holding himself rigid as if any movement would rupture something inside him. His blood is clotting up. His bloodstream is throwing clots, and the clots are lodging everywhere. His liver, kidneys, lungs, hands, feet, and head are becoming jammed with blood clots. In effect, he is having a stroke through the whole body. Clots are accumulating in his intestinal muscles, cutting off the blood supply to his intestines. The intestinal muscles are starting to die, and the intestines are starting to go slack. He doesn't seem to be fully aware of pain any longer because the blood clots lodged in his brain are cutting off blood flow. His personality is being wiped away by brain damage. This is called depersonalization, in which the liveliness and details of character seem to vanish. He is becoming an automation. Tiny spots in his brain are liquefying. The higher functions of consciousness are winking out first, leaving the deeper parts of the brainstem, the primitive rat brain, the lizard brain, still alive and functioning. It could be said that the who of Charles Monet has already died, while the what of Charles Monet continues to live. The vomiting attack appears to have broken some blood vessels in his nose. He gets a nosebleed. The blood comes from both nostrils, a shining, clotless arterial liquid that drips over his teeth and chin. This blood keeps running because the clotting factors have been used up. A flight attendant gives him some paper towels, which he uses to stop up his nose, but the blood still won't coagulate, and the towels soak through. When a man is getting sick in an airline seat next to you, you may not want to embarrass him by calling attention to the problem. You say to yourself that this man will be all right. Maybe he doesn't travel well in airplanes. He is airsick, the poor man, and people do get nosebleeds in airplanes. The air is so thin and dry. And you ask him weakly if there is anything you can do to help. He does not answer, or he mumbles words you can't understand, so you try to ignore it, but the flight seems to go on forever. Perhaps the flight attendants will offer to help him, but victims of this type of hot virus have changes in behavior that can render them incapable of responding to an offer of help. They become hostile and don't want to be touched. They don't want to speak. They answer questions with grunts or monosyllables. They can't seem to find words. They can tell you their name, but they can't tell you the day of the week or explain what has happened to them. When the plane lands at Jomo Kenyatta International Airport, Monet stirs himself. He is still able to walk. He stands up, dripping. He stumbles down the gangway onto the tarmac. His shirt is a red mess. He carries no luggage. His only luggage is internal, and it is a load of amplified virus. Monet has been transformed into a human virus bomb. He walks slowly into the airport terminal and through the building and out to a curving road where taxis are parked. The taxi drivers surround him. "Nairobi," he mumbles.
Red eye. loose like a mask with no emotions. Organs turn into soup. You go into convulsions. Born with the you fought with the monkey, you crashed and you bled. Rainbow's revenge, man, the hemorrhage won't stop. The hemorrhage won't stop. The hemorrhage won't stop. The hemorrhage won't stop. The hemorrhage won't stop.
Mucus.
Mucus? What the hell is mucus?
It's your body's armor.
But it's so thick and slimy, how can that be armor?
Germs get caught in it.
Uh-huh.
You expectorate, germs are out of you.
So if you take an expectorant, like, oh, I don't know.
An 8-ounce bottle of dextromethorphan? I mean, Robitussin.
Robitussin DM with dextromethorphan. That'll make you cough and shrink and talk funny.
And become a robot.
And burble.
A boy that, was, while I was away in boarding school, lived with Ronnie by the name of Dwight Demont. Used to live there with Ronnie, and they would, instead of blowing their nose on a handkerchief, would stick their finger up in their nose and pull out all their boogers and smear them on the window. I don't know. I always thought it was crazy. It didn't look good. And after a while, I mean, you couldn't see out the window.
Did you ever do that?
I may have added one or two on there, yeah.
This is the weatherman once again. Let's see, is there
this
anyone
now? This
just
goes out of sight. Yeah, but good looking there won't look over
here. Didn't stop. There we go. See, Dick doesn't know how to run the board too well.
No, we're just playing radio station.
Yeah. I'm going to try again. Is there anyone at 14529? I have it in the radio now. You can come on and go ahead. While I'm waiting for that, some of you may have heard a lot about mucus in months past, and there's a special record that I finally got. You're finally gonna know the truth about old Ben Lucas and his mucus. Do you have that all ready to go, Dick? Why don't you hit it right now? Unless you want to finish with that. And here it is now. It's the original
old Ben
one.
Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He picked.
Well, old Ben Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He picked and picked till it made you sick, but back again it grows. He picked and picked till it made you sick, but back again it grows.
Well, there you've got it. That's old Ben Lucas had a lot of mucus, and that's the Texas Jew Boys, I believe. I finally came through from that, and I don't know what I want to do now after that.
All right, stop it!
I'm sorry, we'll have to wait for this feedback.
All right, Richie Family, 1975.
Old Ben Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He picked and picked till it made you sick, but back again it grows. When it's cotton picking time in Texas, Lord, it's booger picking time for Ben. Stick each finger mean and hostile, put it in each waiting nostril. Here it comes with a green one once again, all together now. Uh-oh. He can't listen to it. He's putting the headphones on.
Okay, a little entertainment courtesy of the weatherman, I guess.
We'll be right back.
live in a little room, man. It's probably a fourth as big as your living room, Frank. And every time we picked a booger, we'd flip it on this one window, or wipe it there if we couldn't flip it there, you know. And I guess Dwight stayed with me for about 7 months, wasn't it? 6 months. And every night we'd contribute, you know, two or three, four boogers, you know. And when he left, well, Mom knew what was going on all the time, but we thought we had her hoodwinked. She was smarter than what we were. And she made us clean them off, you know. We used Ajax, and we couldn't get them things. We had to use a putty knife, man, to get them damn things off the window. You couldn't even see out the window for all them boogers, man. I'm not kidding you. When it was big ones too, and there was little, and there were some goober ones that weren't even hard, man. That would just smear on young ones. It like frost. You know, you seen frosted glasses? That one that was just like a frosted glass with spots all over it. You know, and it was no good. Oh boy, that was good old days though.
Stereo WREK, Atlanta.
If you would like more information on the Church of the Subgenius,
write to them at P.O. Box 204206, Austin, Texas 78720-4206. Or visit them online at
www.subgenius.com. Another fine Lymph Node production!
Visit us online at lymphnodeinstitute.com.
Or
shout out at mp3.com/LNI.
Or write to us at P.O. Box 670-541, Marietta, Georgia 30066-0126.
Because we don't want to live in a world full of zombies, do you?
You have heard Allen Ginsberg performing The Sick Rose, Lymph Node Institute put together the Pathogens collage, and then you heard the old ad for Bob's Slacktime Funhouse. You heard the Green County Medical Society, perhaps, performing It Must Be a Virus, then Fugazi doing Smallpox Champion, and then just a taste of Pac-Man Fever by Jerry Garcia, of course. Tim with a B, the Enchanter, performed the Anthrax song. Then you heard Dr. Bugbladder doing his thing with monkeys. Then the Lymph Node Institute did the Chinese chicken flu rant from way back there, but it remains relevant, I swear. Then the Green County Medical Society once again with a toast to the doctors. And following that was a reading from Richard Preston's The Hot Zone. Intermingled with that was the Lymph Node Institute doing Beef Hits, and the Green County Medical Society, perhaps one last time, performing that song about halitosis. And then Crunky played Ebola. After that was Ronnie's Booger Story from a Frank Zappa album. Then Negative Land with A Lot About Mucus from The Starting Line. Then our good friend Ted Man performed Loogies of Doom, followed by Kenny's Booker Story, also from the same Frank Zappa album. And we'll finish up with William Burroughs and Gus Van Sant performing Word is Virus. And in the background is Frog Star Battle Machine performing Infection Mode.
Word begets image, and image is virus. Word begets image, and image is virus. Is virus.
and images.
Word begets image, and image
is virus,
and is.
Word begets image, and image is
virus.
Word begets image, and image is
virus.
Is
virus,
and image is. Word begets image, and image
is
virus,
and is.
Yeah, one over. So, for your
What the hell do you think you're doing?
It should be painfully obvious by now that the world as we know it won't last too much longer.
And what are you going to do about it?
Going to work or school? Coming home? Goofing around?
What will happen to your routine when it all comes down at once?
Don't you feel responsible for trying to help this endangered planet?
No.
Good.
Bob can show you that
the fact is, it's too late.
Things are going to hell on a fast train, and about the only thing you
can do about it is to just sit back and watch the show.
But remember,
the end of the world may be much worse and take much longer than you thought.
Will you be ready?
Will you still be sane enough to laugh?
When that which must come to pass comes to pass?
Yes! And J.R. Bob Dobbs can show you how. The Hour of Slack, every Saturday night at midnight, right here on WREK Atlanta.